Morning, everyone. Happy Groundhog Day. I hope this doesn't turn into the Groundhog Day movie. No shadow. No. No shadows. Shorter winter, right? We're going to wrap up a few ground fish issues, and then we will get back on to this morning's scheduled agenda. I'm going to start with David Pierce, and then to Doug Grout for some motions.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yesterday I indicated that I had at least one suggested action that we could offer up to Sam Rock, to NOAA Fisheries, regarding management measures that would be desirable on an emergency basis to deal with the Gulf of Maine cod situation. And I'll make one at this time. And it's a motion I make that I believe is necessary for us to have more accountability, more accuracy regarding the actual location of catch by fishermen, notably fishermen fishing in the Gulf of Maine, although this would apply to other areas too. I'll make the motion, and it reads, and this would be Karen, motion number one. And it reads, for more effective monitoring of groundfish catch by broad stock area, that's Gulf of Maine, inshore and offshore Georges Bank, and southern New England mid-Atlantic, a vessel prior to leaving port on each trip declared into the groundfish fishery will be required to declare via VMS or IVR call-in system his or her intent to fish in one of the four stock areas. Fishing will be allowed only in one stock area per trip. So that is my motion, Mr. Chairman.
George.
Yeah, just a question. Is this intended to be a recommendation to the Secretary to do through the emergency action that you requested yesterday?
Yes.
Or the interim action, I should say.
Yes, interim action because of, what I have learned through all of the scoping hearings that I have attended, through conversations with a number of fishermen regarding what appears to be a common practice, which would be to fish in the Gulf of Maine using whatever allocation may happen to have been acquired by the vessel, either original allocation or something that was acquired through leasing, and then crossing over into the Georges Bank area. It's easy to do. The Georges Bank boundary is very close to the actual Gulf of Maine. It's just off of the tip of Provincetown. And then steaming into port and claiming that those fish came from Georges Bank, not the Gulf of Maine. And I suspect that with the lower quotas being implemented for 2012, that this behavior could become even more common. And we need to take steps through this interim action that would provide a disincentive, actually prevent it from happening. So that's why I offer up this motion.
Is there a second? Doug Grout. Discussion. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was ambivalent to this issue until I found out this morning that there is a very large differential in price of lease quota between the two of the areas, and that this provides a substantial incentive for misreporting. And for that reason, I support this. I think it's a little too wordy, but I support it.
I'm Mary Beth.
Not speaking directly to the motion, but to the emergency action, I do wonder at what point, our ability to add things into this, to add other measures that may have disproportionate impacts to different sectors of the fishery. I mean, this may be a good motion. It may not be. I personally really don't know. We are recommending measures that are not going to go through the normal public process not going to be vetted. So at what point are we going too far? That's my question.
I have Jim and then Paul.
Well, obviously, I'm going to oppose this. This is going to absolutely backfire on you. This is going to guarantee that you have many large boats that never fish in the Gulf of Maine. A little bit. Or never catch any Gulf of Maine cod fish in the Gulf of Maine. The way boats are operating now is we try to go offshore. If we don't find anything, we come into the Gulf of Maine from Georges, and cost of fuel and everything, we try to fish redfish or pollock or something else. Our company, I'm just using this for instance, we caught 20,000 pounds of Gulf of Maine cod for the year. For the year. We have a lot more ace than that we have traded with some of the smallest boats in the fleet. Now, if you're going to restrict boats like us to an area, then we're not going to trade that anymore to those people. We're going to catch it because we cannot afford to be stuck in one broadstock area, and we will not fish offshore. We can't afford to go there and come back all the way to the dock with no fish. You just can't do it. Our cost of fuel in operations in 3 years has gone up 75%. So this will absolutely not accomplish your goal. It will fail. If people are misreporting, as you allege, that I don't know if it's going on or not, that's against the law already. So if a few people are cheating, you're going to shift the whole industry on its head, then what we need to do is ask somebody to enforce the law, not do something that will absolutely guarantee backfire. We will not fish on Eastern Georges until every pound of our Gulf of Maine ace is caught. We will not go there. We will be on Middle Bank, which we haven't been. We have not fished there. 20,000 pounds of Gulf of Maine cod catch. Our sector caught only 6% of our catch was Gulf of Maine cod the first year of operation. 6%. 75% of what we catch is redfish, pollock, and haddock. You're just going to backfire things. We need more flexibility, not less. So I think you're making a huge mistake, both in what the outcome will be and also in fairness. 85% of the Gulf of Maine cod catch is by 50-foot boats that never go in more than one stock area. The cost of doing something like this is just astronomical. If there's a problem, get monitoring to check it out. Find out what it is and enforce the law. That's it.
Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was my point I wanted to make, is that in addition to this motion, we could send a letter if the council wants to Special Agent Logan there and ask him to look at VMS records and check them with dealer, and if we perceive this as an enforcement issue, we should let him know what's going on and have him look into it. And it seems to me pretty easy to look at the VMS and then look at dealer reports and check that out.
Rodney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm opposed to this motion because it does exactly what Jim says. It locks everybody into one broad stock area. And that's the way I've been fishing for 47 years. And I never left the dock and could say I'm going to fish in this area, and that's why I get my trip. Most of the areas I chose before I left the dock, I didn't end up getting my trip there. What this does is it locks a boat into that area and forces them to fish where you don't want them to fish. They need the flexibility to go outside. And if they can get their trip there, then continue. If not, they need to at least cover the expenses for that trip. Maybe top off, go inside there and get the expenses so the crew don't owe expenses for the next trip going out. So all this does is harness the fishermen. This is not fishing friendly. Thank you.
Dave Gaethel.
I mean, this may not be the right motion, but something has to be done. The rules as they exist at the moment are unenforceable. Even with an observer on the boat, they're unenforceable. You could put 100% observer coverage, you still won't know where the fish were caught. If you have people fishing in two broadstock areas or more, they're going to report the fish wherever the fish are the cheapest to buy. It's that simple. And it's unenforceable. You can't do it with VMS. You can't do it with anything. You know, the idea that we can just monitor the VMS, unless there's a line you cross, and when you cross it, you're in violation, it's unenforceable. So you have to do something. I guarantee you right now, I guarantee it, because I know how fishermen operate. I'm one of them. That fish are being reported wherever they're the cheapest to buy. And that there's, you know, that's just the way it is. And if you have the ability to fish in multiple broadstock areas, you're going to report the fish wherever they're the cheapest. It's that simple. You know, what Jimmy says may or may not be true. But, you know, we opened a whole bunch of areas yesterday so that boats, offshore boats, would have plenty of places to fish offshore. You know, we've got to do something. Now, if people don't like this idea, I would suggest they offer an alternative that makes it enforceable to know that Gulf of Maine cod were caught in the Gulf of Maine and that Georges Bank cod were caught on Georges Bank. Because right now it's not enforceable. And to say to the sectors, well, you know, you're jointly and severably liable if your people misreport, how's the sector supposed to know? They don't know. Nobody knows. The only person who knows is the guy running the boat. And I guarantee you he's not talking. And they can do it with an observer sitting right there. Observers don't have a clue. I hate to tell you folks, but, you know, they don't have a clue. They don't have any idea what's going on. They write down where the haul starts and where it ends. And if the captain says, and then they say, well, where'd you catch these fish? Oh, I got them on George's Bank. That's what they write down in the report. You know, so, like I said, the people who don't like it, offer an alternative. Offer a way to make it enforceable. Because this is the only way that I can think of at the moment to do it.
David.
Yeah, I hear Jimmy. I hear Rodney. Dave has made some of the points I was going to make. What we have in place right now is not enforceable. Reporting by area will occur wherever the fishermen care to report their alleged catch from. Or the catch. I know it is not a fisherman-friendly motion. It's not supposed to be fisherman-friendly. It's resource-friendly. And frankly, yesterday we could have gone with 1,000 tons Gulf of Maine codfish or something like that to deal with the necessity of getting mortality down to 0.2, getting us better prepared for 2013. We didn't do that. We did something responsible yesterday. We gave to the fishermen opportunities that they otherwise would not have gotten. We were responsive to the socioeconomic concerns of the fishing fleet inshore as well as offshore. So this is not fisherman-friendly, but it is what I consider to be a very important step to take to accompany the larger catch that we would allow through this interim action with NOAA's approval.
Okay, Rodney, and then we're going to go to the audience.
Yeah, this is going to do exactly what the Days at Sea did. The Days at Sea fish forced offshore boats inshore. That's exactly what it did, because nobody wanted to burn a day going out to Georges and burn another day coming back to Georges. This is going to be the same thing. We shouldn't even have broadstock areas. People got ace. They should be able to catch their ace whatever they can. The stock area should be just for scientific. It shouldn't be for management. That's my opinion. You got fish, catch it. You only got so much fish, catch it wherever you catch it. Bring it home.
Go to the audience. Maggie, Tom, you got a comment?
Yeah, I just wondered if people would like to see a chart of the areas that I think David's talking about, just to make sure we know what we're talking about by broad stock areas. Do you? Can you give me that?
While he's doing that, Maggie, do you want to come up?
Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. First of all, I'd like to say that I'm offended by this statement that it's common practice that misreporting is taking place. And we are totally opposed to this motion. We discussed this, debated this in Amendment 16, for all the reasons that Jim and Rodney mentioned, the council decided then not to restrict boats to one broadstock area. what you want boats to do is to spread their effort out over the largest area possible. So some boats go and fish on Georgia's Bank part of the trip and Gulf of Maine on another part of the trip. If you restrict them excuse me, to one broad stock area, I do expect that there will be more effort in the Gulf of Maine as a result of that. On those trips, they will have to make a choice. And my sense is that they will definitely make the choice for the Gulf of Maine. But this is an issue that I think NIMS could look at. There aren't that many boats that fish in more than one broadstock area on the same trip. They could look at their VTRs and see if there is a difference between their reporting when they have an observer and when they don't. And they could then, you know, find out if there is actual misreporting by certain, if it appears that there is misreporting by some individuals, then enforcement could look at that more closely. But to, you know, punish everyone for some alleged misreporting is simply the wrong thing to do. One of the reasons why this kind of motion should not be in an emergency action is because you need a lot of time to think through all of the implications. For example, if you believe there's misreporting of Gulf of Maine cod as Georgia's Bank, why would you restrict boats from fishing in broadstock area 2 and 3 on the same trip when those are both Georgia's Bank cod stock area? So this is really a bad, bad thing to do in emergency action. This is an issue that NIMS can work on through enforcement, the committee can look at, the sectors can work out plans on their own to try to deal with this. It's not a kind of issue that should be dropped on your lap on a morning when the public doesn't even know that you're discussing groundfish. Thank you.
Vito.
Vito Gigoloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. We would certainly oppose this motion, but we would want to let the council know that, number one, this would be a death knell to the inshore fleet. The offshore fleet, which is down to next to nothing compared to what it's been historically. And it's been because of a continued lack of flexibility. It's been because of trip limits. It's been because of a lot of things. We have a lot of areas closed right now that historically were open to the offshore fleet. We lost the Hague Line in 85. It's just been constantly, incrementally, and if you tried to put something like this in an emergency action, there'd have to be an analysis to show how many trips happen successfully that are in multiple broadstock areas and see how many people would be wiped out by losing that flexibility. We also wanted to point out that we recognize that there are potential issues in mostly stuff that's happened maybe west of the 7015, a lot of the inshore fleet is alarmed when they see a large boat there. They instantly think that that's going on. And as Maggie said, alleged misreporting is turning into something where all of the honest stuff that's going on here would be destroyed. So we are working on it internally to alleviate the perception of any potential for wrongdoing, and we would like to do that through our operations plans. We have an ongoing discussion going on in our network, and we're looking to talk to the other sectors and see if everyone is willing to look at something that may make a lot more sense for the offshore fleet and also do away with this concern that people have about the misreporting. But, you know, there's... I'd like to also point out in New Bedford, we have four sectors. Two of them are mostly owner-operated, single vessel, single permit sectors. They went from 20 active vessels in each of those sectors of their fishing activity in 2007. They're down to 9 in each. That's a loss of 11 active vessels in each of those two. There's been a tremendous loss in that what's left of that offshore fleet. No one's really looking at that. The other thing that we've found is there's only 30 vessels that are fishing now that have full range in Portland, Gloucester, Boston, and three out of New Bedford that are fishing in and out of the Gulf of Maine. That's 30 boats total. So the loss in that sector of the fleet can't not, you know, if we don't recognize that, we're really missing something. And taking away the flexibility at this point, if you look at eastern Gulf of Maine, the amount of activity that happens east of Gulf of Maine, they get news of haddock. Those haddock don't wait for you to go 24 hours to the west, start a new trip, lose half the crew, get fuel again, wait for an observer for 48-hour notification. By the time you get back out there, it's all over. You know, if people understood how the offshore fishery works, they'd know that when you're east of that western Gulf of Maine closure, that's all one ocean. And if you can't work the entire range, you got no chance of making a successful trip. None of that's been analyzed at this point. So we're not sitting here saying there aren't things to be looked at. We're just saying hitting it with one big hammer like this would be a very inappropriate way to handle this. Thank you.
George?
Yeah, just let me make kind of a general comment here. Remember our discussion yesterday, I think it was Gene said that whatever you recommend to the Secretary for inclusion in this emergency action, we have full discretion to either do it, not do it, or do something else. So whether or not this motion passes or others similar to it, they are recommendations to us. If other people have ideas as to how better solve a problem, we'd be glad to hear that. We're going to have to consider what we're going to do in this emergency action, how we're going to address the issues. So whether or not this or other motions pass, if individuals have ideas as to how to better solve a problem, we'd like to hear that between now and the next few weeks. Thank you.
Carl, and then Brett.
Carl Bouchard, I basically support the motion, but not exactly as written. I think Broadstock Area 1 should be separate from the other broadstock areas. In other words, I think that you should be able to fish in broadstock area 2, 3, 4, or however many they are, exclusive of broadstock area 1. Broadstock area 1 is Gulf of Maine. Gulf of Maine cod is the hot topic. And now that we have asked to open up a huge area around Cashers Ledge, the eastern side of the Jeffreys Bank closure, there's far more opportunity for the offshore vessels to get a trip in here. This is not generic to big boats or small boats. The fact is, it is presently legal. It's not a question of enforcement. It is presently legal to tow for as many hours as you want and haul back on the other side of the line. And as far as the observer is concerned, that is George's fish. And it isn't just cod. It's all the dabs, gray sole, and everything else. But cod is the one that we're concerned with. So it is perfectly legal. It's not an enforcement issue. It's not something that can be corrected by looking at the VMS records. And it's not something that can be corrected by looking at the trip reports. There's only one way to do it, is to isolate the Gulf of Maine from the rest of the ocean. You know, that's a huge area. And with the small reduction, with the reduction that we took yesterday, you know, these vessels are going to need that cod quota to catch their other species in the Gulf of Maine to the east of there. So I don't believe that this is going to put more effort on the inshore area. You know, it just isn't going to happen. They're going to catch their codfish out there anyway. I had a couple of notes. I want to make sure I got them all. So far as the vessels that are being lost, Vito just referred to, you know, many of these are on an individual owner. And basically, he's lowering his overhead by catching the fish with less vessels. I mean, if he owns X amount of quota and he distributes amongst six of his boats, that's certainly much more efficient to put all that quota on three of the boats. I don't buy the deal that these vessels are lost. It's just a good business decision by cutting his overhead and putting it on fewer vessels. Thank you.
Brett?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brett Tolley with the Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance. I just want to say that we support this motion, and I'd like to highlight the Amendment 18 scoping process and the fact that a lot of these same discussions have been going on over the past month. And this was, I believe, the most common issue that came up was the increase in concentration of offshore fishing in inshore areas and the misreporting. So I think this is an attempt at solving that problem. And I would also encourage that as NIMS takes a look at this emergency action, that you also take a look at the comments and the discussion that's been happening around scoping and around ideas and strategies for how to mitigate low quota allocations and the effects of consolidation. Thank you.
Second bite, Vito.
I just think it's important, to follow up on Kyle's. The two sectors we were talking about are all single boat, single permit, primarily operators. It's not a consolidation inside one business. These are totally isolated sectors that had 20 individual operators that are down to 9 in each. The other guys are just leasing their quota. And it's been accumulative things that have happened. It's been Southern New England winter flounder going right to zero. All right, there was a big group of people that relied on that stock, and we watched it go to zero for a rebuilding plan. We've got Georgia's yellowtail down to 700 metric ton. That's a yellowtail fleet. You got regulations on skates that have happened over the last 5 or 6 years that have cut them down. You got an entire fleet of vessels that were full-time with 5 men, got their boats tied to the dock. And if they can't leave New Bedford and go through 3 stock areas to go to work, to make a trip, which is all one piece of bottom to them, same edges, then you're going to take 9 down to 2. That's the point that we're making. If you leave out of Portland or Gloucester and you try to make a trip offshore, I'm not talking west of the 7015, you get outside, you're in the same ocean. And to think that you can start drawing lines out there and make a successful trip at $4 a gallon fuel and the cost of a turnaround on a trip, it's the end of the offshore fleet. There's no secret to why the offshore fleet has gone from 200 and something boats to about 60 active boats in the entire Northeast right now, about 60 active offshore boats. So, we keep talking about fleet diversity, and that's the portion of the fleet that's shrinking. The handful that are left are the top dogs that are really good fishermen that work their ass off, and every time there's a cut, a lot of those guys go away. So just, the whole fleet's important, and flexibility fishing offshore is to be able to fish the full range. And it's, if it's an enforcement issue or an incentives issue, then we need to work on those issues and not come up with something that's just looks like a no-brainer, but to a fisherman, he sees the end.
Back to the council, Tom Dempsey.
I just want to, I think, I agree that it's critical for any type of program like this to correctly attribute catch to the right area, but we have to do that in such a way that we maintain flexibility. And I just want to say that I actually don't think that this is just a Gulf of Maine cod issue. We're looking at a yellowtail stock, abutting yellowtail stocks that have very high disproportionate or differential in their ACLs. So I think we need to address this. I think Paul's comments at the outset in terms of flagging this for an enforcement issue to bringing it up with the service as to how to think through whether we can evaluate the existing problem and how we can get a handle on it. I agree. I think this is I'm going to oppose this because I think it's too far. I think it's an issue that we need to deal with. We need to understand first and deal with. And that's my comment. And I do think that if this ultimately is voted down, that we should pursue something along the lines of what Paul Howard suggested, and that is to flag this issue, to raise it as an enforcement priority, and to move forward in that way.
At the moment, I Rodney, Terry, and Frank.
Yeah, thank you. Just to let you know, last trip my boat went to Georgia's. Cost me $1,000 to get there before I even set my net, and $1,000 to get home. My trip, my fuel bill was $9,000 for that trip. So, I mean, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to save $2,000 to fish on the beach.
Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. This motion seeks to resolve an enforcement problem by further micromanaging the fishery, and I'm opposed to that. I support Paul's idea of working with the service to look at this issue not only for cod, but I believe in several weeks when we get the updated stock assessments, we may be looking at several other species as well.
Frank?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope everybody remembers that we had a fisherman come to the council several years ago. His name was Donald Fox. And it took him 2 years to correct the problem, and I believe it was monkfish and yellowtail, from going into two areas. And the council worked on it, and it took quite a while. And between going to the service and the council and everything, it took him almost 2 years to correct that, where he could go to the two areas, because he was catching two different species in two different areas. So I'd hate to go back and undo, because I think this would do exactly the same thing to him for two species that, we are concerned about the yellowtail, but we have to be very careful. And I want everybody to go back a long time ago when the council asked for emergency action, probably I think it was back in 95, 94, we put a word in there that said all vessels. And it took almost a year to get hag fishermen back allowed into closed areas. You have to be very, very careful when you ask for stuff here and you don't know what the consequences are going to be. I believe that this isn't, it's an enforcement problem. There aren't a lot of boats. We also, what we used to do, or I believe, if you were fishing in two stock areas, and I'd ask Jimmy and Rodney, but you were bound by the most restrictive trip limit. We no longer have trip limits. So, I mean, that's not an option here. You could say that the Gulf of Maine cod is the most restrictive quota, maybe, and say that if you're fishing in both areas, they're going to be charged for the Gulf of Maine cod. And you can still fish in both areas, but the consequence is they're going to be charged as to the most restrictive. You would say that the quota is a restricting factor there. But, I mean, that's just an option. But you have to be very, very careful here when you ask to do something, because to change it is tremendous. Thank you.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm convinced it's the wrong tool for the job. The problem exists. I'm convinced of that as well. But this is the wrong tool for the job. I will vote against this. And I'm curious as to what George mentioned. The ability to deal with this through enforcement is that a reasonable way to proceed?
I think it depends on which part of the problem we're talking about. If you're talking about true misreporting, that's one thing. But I think it was Carl who mentioned that it's not illegal to start a tow in one area, end it in another. That's really not an enforcement issue right now. So, I mean, there may be aspects that we could look at and tighten up, but I don't think that's the whole answer to the problem. Or the issue.
Thank you. I think Rodney is exactly right. I've thought it right along for quite a while now. We shouldn't be managing by stock areas.
Anyone who hasn't spoken on this? Glenn?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. We started out talking about price. What's the difference in lease price between Gulf of Maine and Georgia's?
Dave?
It's about $1.20 to $1.50 for Gulf of Maine cod versus 60 to 80 cents for Georgia's Bank cod.
Anyone else who hasn't spoken on it? I'll call the question. Look. Mary Beth.
I just wanted to go back to my initial comment, which is I think this process is not right. We have a perceived problem. We have nothing on the table that indicates that we know there is a problem, and I don't think we should be adding things onto this request for an emergency action that belong in regular regulatory action that we develop with the public. We can see who's here from the ground fish fishery this morning. From a process perspective, I'm just really opposed to adding things on here.
I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the motion, so indicate. Three in favor. Opposed? Fourteen in opposition, abstention, zero. Motion fails. David Pierce.
In light of what I heard regarding the opposition to the motion that indeed did fail, I'd like to offer another motion that I think addresses the concerns expressed by those around the table. And you don't have this, Karen, so I would move that a vessel prior to leaving port on each trip declared into the ground fish fishery and intending to fish in the Gulf of Maine will be required to declare via VMS or the IVR call-in system his her intent to fish in the Gulf of Maine. And then next sentence, fishing will be allowed only in the Gulf of Maine on that trip. No, it's only for the Gulf of Maine. It doesn't address the shift of effort between Western Georgia's and Eastern Georgia's, the Southern New England and Mid-Atlantic. It is specific to the Gulf of Maine.
Is there a second? David Gaitel. Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things I was thinking along these lines is that if you remember the slides yesterday of the Gulf of Maine cod assessment and you look at the contraction of the stock from the east to the west, and you can almost draw a line from the tip of Cape Cod due north, and most of the stock is inshore western Gulf of Maine. So an alternative might be that if you're going to fish west of this line, you can't fish anywhere else, or something like that. That protects Gulf of Maine cod where it is now. So that's an alternative to talking about the whole Gulf of Maine.
Jim?
Well, I'm just as opposed to this as I was to the first one, the protection to the Gulf of Maine cod is in the quota. There's a limit on the amount of Gulf of Maine cod that can be caught. What we've done here is we have created a cod-dependent fleet through our social engineering over the past 15 years. And that was completely created by the measures that this council has implemented over the years. And now you want to further put measures in effect that will not allow people to be diverse and catch other stocks. This is just going to contract the effort into the Gulf of Maine until the people utilize their quota, and then they will just move off. It's just, again, have the opposite effect. And I wonder how the markets are going to feel if the only product they're getting is a few Gulf of Maine cod for long periods of time. I mean, the thing that's keeping the market alive now is redfish, pollock, and some haddock. If we take that out of the market, then the small boat guy is going to suffer. The infrastructure is not going to be there. We're going to lose what left. We just heard yesterday they're looking for salmon and everything else to sell. I mean, I just don't get it. We are absolutely creating what you are talking about not wanting. That's a dependent fleet on something that we need to diversify. It's just, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Comment in support. Seeing none, I'm going to call the question. Rodney?
Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Please read the motion on the board and answer yes, no, or abstain. Mark Alexander.
No.
Rodney Avila.
No.
Frank Blount.
No.
Tom Dempsey.
No.
Mark Gibson.
No.
David Gaffel.
Yes.
Doug Grout.
Abstain.
Peter Kendall.
No.
George Darcy.
No.
Glenn Libby.
No.
Sally McGee.
No.
James Ottolin.
No.
David Pierce.
Yes.
Dave Preble.
No.
Laura Ramsden.
No.
Terry Stockwell.
No.
Mary Beth Tooley.
No.
Motion fails.
Motion fails. Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yesterday I was agreeing with what Mary Beth had was stated, that we shouldn't be adding things on to this emergency action, but where we already took an action to add something, rather substantial recommendation on there, I feel that we also need to try and address some of the dramatic effects that some of the emergency action and potentially what's going to happen in 2013 to help some of our smallest fleet, and that's the hand gear fleet. And I have a couple of motions that I'd like to take one at a time that the hand gear fleet feels would help them out with some of this, getting through this trying times. And if Karen could put that first one up. I move to request National Marine Fisheries Service include in the interim action a measure to eliminate the trimester accountability measures developed in Amendment 16 for the common pool. The reason for this is, as you all know, the common pool quota is extremely small. From what I've heard from the PDT, some members of the PDT, essentially what the quota that's in the common pool is what is was a result of hand gear A boats. Obviously, they're very small. Most of them are part-time, but they still make some of their living on ground fish. And so they're concerned, especially the ones that are fishing in the western Gulf of Maine, and they don't have a very far range that they can go, that most of their fishing takes place in that first quarter. And there isn't much to be had after that when the second quarter or the third quarter would, or third trimester, the second trimester or third trimester. So they were asking that essentially the quota be allocated as it is right now, and this would be one way to help them mitigate some of the effects of some of the actions we took yesterday.
Is there a second? Peter Kendall. Discussion. Mary Beth.
I would just ask Tom to just give us a little background on why we have the trimester now, and if he sees any issues with the motion moving in this direction. I don't really have any idea.
When we were developing Amendment 16, we had some options for accountability measures. The sector options were pretty obvious. It's a hard quota. And we had some other options, which I actually can't remember what they all were, for the common pool of vessels. As the amendment developed and at the final meeting, to be honest, during the development of the amendment, we spent very little time on the hard tack accountability option for the common pool. We basically yanked it out of Amendment 13 option. We spent very little time on it during development because most people didn't really see that as a viable option for the common pool. However, when the council voted on Amendment 13 at the last council meeting, the argument was put forward that it was not consistent for the sectors to be subject to a hard quota and not have the common pool subject to a hard quota. So what was passed was that for the first couple of years, the accountability measures for the common pool would be days at sea adjustments. There's a differential day at sea adjustment, and there's trip limits that change, the typical effort control measures. But beginning in fishing year 2012, there was a hard quota program implemented. And that hard quota program is kind of complicated, to put it mildly. It divides everything up into trimester tacks, and they're all monitored individually. It excludes some stocks, and that's why we address the AM in Framework 47 for windowpane flounder and that type of thing. But it was really viewed kind of as a fairness and an effectiveness issue to try and put the common pool on the same footing as the sectors beginning in fishing year 2012. Sarah may know the numbers better than I do. I suspect if you look, you would see that the accountability measures that have been in place for the common pool for fishing year 2010, I believe, probably with the exception of northern windowpane flounder, that it did keep the common pool, those measures did keep the common pool below their sub-ACLs, I think. They're shaking their heads yes, so I think I'm right. So, in a nutshell, it appears that, that's why they were adopted. That's why the hard tack goes into effect in 2012 for the common pool. That's why it goes into effect. You could make the argument that our experience in at least fishing year 2010 and perhaps so far in fishing year 2011 shows that we might have adequate controls on the common pool with the existing accountability measures. One question that I haven't given much thought to, and maybe Gene has, was whether the recent decision on Amendment 16's accountability measures would change this interpretation as to whether the common pool effort control AMs are adequate or not.
Tom. This is a question for my own clarification. If we eliminate the trimester accountability measures, we still would have the annual hard tack backstop? Is that?
Well, I'm not sure of that because I think the way Amendment 16 is written is it says that in fishing year 2012, these replace the common pool accountability measures. I'd have to go back. I think Melissa's going back and looking at the regulation to see how it's written now. I don't recall if that completely wipes the slate clean or if we keep them forward.
George.
Well, I think this has a lot of implications because this would remove the accountability measures that are reactive. And that is one of the issues in the litigation you were asking about. So, and these accountability measures apply to all the stocks, or almost all the stocks, not just Gulf of Maine cod. So I think this is a fairly big deal.
Gene.
I'm in a cloud about exactly what is the trimester, maybe for enlightenment for everybody, if not just for me. The trimester accountability measure, is that something that's just going into place for the first time in 2012 that will allocate so much tack on a trimester basis so that it's not all closed down in the first month? Is that the idea behind it? And so it wasn't clear to me whether this was meant to eliminate the reactive accountability measure or to make it on an annual basis instead of a trimester basis. I don't know, maybe the maker can clarify that.
The intent was to have it on an annual
basis.
Okay. It'll be reactive on an annual basis. If I need a
Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Assuming the catch is all allocated to the common pool at once, they could close down rather quickly then if it gets all caught up in the first month, so to speak, instead of spacing it out, right?
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I think there are two issues here. One is this would be a new program, and one question I would have is it you know, it's going to be fairly burdensome to administer on the part of the service to keep track of the fish on a quarterly basis. That was the reason it didn't get implemented till 2012, is that there wasn't the capability at the time of doing that. But the second question is one of spreading the fish out over the entire year. And based on last year's common pool discussions, when people came and said, we'd like a higher trip limit on cod to make it viable to leave the pier, and other people came and said, no, we want a low trip limit on cod because we want to fish later on in the year for pollock, those issues still remain. If you go with it opening up May 1st, and whatever minuscule amount of Gulf of Maine cod is in the common pool is caught before the fall, and it probably will be, then those people don't get a chance to fish at all because they have no cod. If you put it in trimesters, then it opens up, and it's going to close. I'll guarantee it's going to close. It'll open up for a month or something, it'll close, and then it'll open up again, and it'll close. And it at least gives people who fish at different times of the year a chance to access the fishery at the time of year they might want to access it. So I'm kind of ambivalent about this. I understand why the people who are proposing this, you know, are proposing it, because they catch most of their fish at a certain time of the year, and they want to catch as many fish as they can at that time of the year. But we've got to think about everybody, not just those people. So, and like I said, my other question is still outstanding to the service. Given the small number of people in the common pool, is it worth the administrative burden of trying to maintain these quarterly quotas?
George.
Well, I think we can do it. And just one other thing. Keep in mind here, we're talking about a one-year action. That's it. So after that, if the council thinks this or other issues are problems, you need to be thinking about taking a longer-term action to address them. This is just a quick fix for addressing an issue for 1 year.
Okay, I've got Terry, and then I'm going to go to those in support.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As George just said, this is a one-year action on an unknown annual catch limit at this time. I mean, following up on David, I remember a very specific discussion on the need to space out the landings over the course of the year. The common pool isn't just hand gear, folks. There are a number of small number, but still a number of common pool folks in Maine that do want to fish the year. Throughout the year, particularly in the fall for pollock, and I would be opposed to this motion.
Anyone in support? Go to the audience. Vito.
We wouldn't have any problem with this as long as the agency can figure it out. I just wanted to throw something out. I think it's a very legitimate issue that group of folks, a bunch of them were here yesterday testifying that they kind of fell through the cracks in the whole sector thing, and we haven't thought about this. I just mentioned it to Jackie, but we do have at least one sector one, I believe it is, NEFS one, is sort of an open template that we would offer, draw up the EIS, the operations plan. It'd be basically a no cost for them. They could, is there an ACE, a sub ACL, I guess, that can be identified for the hand gear A people where a cod could get put into that and they could manage it on their own? There'd be really no cost to them to do it. It's a really small quota. They focus on one stock. You know, we could just fold them into the network, I think, and we'd have to talk to because there's some costs incurred on that. But I think, it's an option if the ACL could be identified and that whole group of people could operate inside their own sector. Then they could make a determination how they want to spread the catch out. They may even be able to lease some quota in and help themselves out a little bit. I just don't know. Mark Grant might be having a, a fit over there, but I don't know if the Canangar A people, is that permit allowed to join a sector, I guess, one. And then, two, is there a way to identify a sub-ACL for that group? And then that would be a long-term solution. So,
George.
The answer to your first question is yes. At least that's what my staff's telling me. Yes, they can join the sector. I don't know about the second. Can a sub-ACL be identified? We're saying yes to that as well.
Well yeah,
if they're in a sector, they can have sector ACE, right, but there's no mechanism available to present to set up a separate sub-ACL for Handgear A boats,
so it would be
which
done
is
under
one
the
of the
operation.
Things that Mark Stettner has suggested in the past.
But they do have PSCs?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Then that's their start, and then they could be in the leasing pool of sectors.
But I think the sector organizing deadlines are passed for fishing year 2012, are they not?
There's your emergency action. Give us. Let them join the sector and we'll give it to them.
Thank you, Vito. And in fact, I had talked with Mark Stettner before about trying to look into, you know, doing exactly what you offered up. I think it's. I think that would be a good solution for them. Doug.
Yeah, just to that point, yes, there is a long-term solution to that. Obviously, via some of the actions you've taken recently, the cost of sectors is very problematic for these small boats, and that's been the hard part for them. I mean, they couldn't afford the monitoring cost, the cost of legal documents and having a sector manager and paying for that. It just isn't going to be cost effective for them to do it. And again, they amount to such a small portion of the overall harvest that it seems like we should be able to come up with something on the long run. And maybe there's some way via having them join a sector that we could craft something out there. It wouldn't be quite as costly for them to do it and might make it viable for them. But what I'm looking for is something with this motion and then a subsequent motion is something that would go into place in 2012 and then we'd look at something on the long term.
I'm going to go back and finish with the audience. Anybody in opposition? Anyone else who wants to speak on this? Back to the council. Tom Dempsey.
Thanks. I actually think there's, and I've talked with Mark and others about this for about a year. We understand the barriers to a small vessel operating in a sector, and I think the barrier is cost. And I think Vito correctly identified there's some ways to get to that. Carving off a sub-ACL, and I don't think this is right. I think there's a way to go forward, and we should all be looking for ways to drive down the operational costs of sectors. But I oppose this.
In support?
Just a point of information. The Downeys community sector does have several Handgear members, and they're looking for new members.
Jim.
Yeah, to the maker of the motion, you know, this is for everybody, the motion. And so, you know, during 16, we had a lot of testimony from a wide range of people, not just Handgear people, that they didn't want us to have a single quota and they were scared of Olympic fisheries. I mean, we've got people from the faraway as Rhode Island that do a little bit of fishing, you know, in the common pool, and we've got some gillnetters in Maine that are fishing in the common pool, and I'm quite sure that they would not want to do this. At least that's what their testimony was during Amendment 16. So since it's so broad, you're trying to correct a problem, it sounds like, for some hand gear people, but we're including a much broader thing. And for that reason, and I have to oppose, I recognize that there's an issue with the small hand gear and we need to cure it, but I'm afraid that this cure is too broad and could be more harmful in the aggregate.
In support. Call the question. All those in favor, so indicate. One. Opposed?
Sixteen.
In opposition. No abstentions. Motion fails. Doug.
Okay, one more, and this is something that's, this will be a motion that is specific to hand gear A's. And if Karen can put that up. To request NIFs include in the interim action a measure that to allow limited access hand gear A permits to statistical grids 132 and 133 in April and May. Again, they're a very small portion of the catch. And this would give them access to another species which they have difficulty in catching outside of the time frame of April and May, and that's haddock. And we have a fully rebuilt haddock, so something like this could potentially provide them access to a little bit more of another species and also allow them to get into cod. Of course, they would not be allowed in the cod spawning protection area. That's clearly still off limit on this. So if I could get a second, maybe we can discuss it.
Second. Seeing none, motion fails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am going to propose that we delay the update on the committee's work on the sector framework and groundfish closed areas until the April meeting. Also on the agenda was a possible review of the sector exemption request and development of the council recommendations. We have not yet received the proposed rule, so I think it might be somewhat difficult to comment, but that's at your discretion. And we have a short report from Annie on the Amendment 18 scoping hearings.
I would go right to the scoping hearings. I think it's hard for us to comment on something that we haven't seen.
You'll be glad to hear this will be very short. Because the scoping period is still open until March 1st of 2012 for written comments. But we did just want to check in and say that over the last 3 weeks, we've had 10 scoping hearings up and down the coast, from Ellsworth all the way down to Manahawkin, New Jersey. We had about 200 people in total show up at the hearings and got, I think, a lot of good feedback. It seems to be a very divisive issue. But I'll be putting together a full summary and trying to do sort of a count of what people were and were not in favor of and report that back, I suppose, at the April meeting.
Anybody have any questions?
Nice report.
I don't even get a chance to sneeze. Thank you, Annie. Okay, we're going to, is there anything else under groundfish, Terry?
That concludes the groundfish committee's report.
And thank you and staff for all the work that you've done on these groundfish issues.
Not so fast.
Sally?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So was it just decided that we're not going to get any update on the progress on the analysis of the potential changes to the mortality closures? Is that?
That wasn't on the.
Okay, I thought you had mentioned that. Was that? I'm sorry, maybe I missed that. That was not something we're going to do. Okay. I do have a question though. So are we going to have a discussion at some point today on council priorities again in the context of the Gulf of Maine COD?
No, that we are going to have at the executive committee meeting a hard look at that to try and match it with staff capability, and we will, if there are changes, we would bring them back to the council at the April meeting.
Okay. If I could, Mr. Chairman, I do have a motion then related to groundfish that hopefully will give some direction in terms of the intent of the council for the executive committee to consider, if I could. Okay. Karen, I just sent you a motion. I would move to clarify the council's continued commitment to completing a thorough analysis of potential changes in the groundfish mortality closures and habitat closures in the context of the habitat amendment. And if I get a second, I'd like to offer some justification.
As I read that, I'm not sure what it says.
Okay, well, if I get a second, then I can.
Okay. Is there a second? Dave Preble.
What it says is that even in the context of the council's advice on the emergency action for groundfish, and especially in light of the motion that passed at the end of the day yesterday by a close margin, and in the hopes of not sounding like sour grapes over here, that the council is still committed to the long-term, more thorough analysis of looking at what potential changes in, as the motion reads, changes in the groundfish mortality closures and the habitat closures mean. So this is just a recommitment on the part of the council to the work that the staff has already begun, and further support so that the staff understands that the council wants and is expecting the work that they're undertaking currently is something that the council is going to use, rather than relying on either the expression from yesterday of an interest in making those changes in the coming fishing year in the context of the emergency action, but rather to get something that's based on a thorough analysis in place. Thank you.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even really think we need this motion. I mean, the emergency action only lasts a year. And then they go back into place unless the council's comes forward with a habitat amendment that keeps them permanently. You know, they still have to do all the analysis and stuff anyway for the habitat amendment, or they're going to go away, I mean, or they're going to come back into place. So I mean, he can vote this up, but it's got to be done anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I agree. I don't think we've done anything that in the last couple of days to change the council priorities, which are going in that direction. So, but I think if we vote this up, that's fine. I'm not sure we should spend a huge amount of time discussing it. Is there anybody against this motion? Jim.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary. I think right now it's a priority. All the executive committee is going to do is take a look, see where our priorities are lining up, and if there's a change necessary in the priorities, it's going to come back to the council. I just think it's not necessary.
Let me ask Gene. I was just thinking, does this in any way, I mean, tie our hands that we have to do something? I mean, under
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's more a statement of, I don't want to diminish what you're doing, but it's more rhetorical, I think, just to clarify to the public and to the council that nothing has changed with respect to this this objective.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure we weren't. Okay, I'm going to go. Anybody against this? Anybody in the audience that doesn't support this? Wants to speak on it? Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor, so indicate. Opposed? Abstention? 15 in favor. 15-0-0. You have another item? Thank you.
Yeah, hopefully this doesn't need a motion. It's time to get moving on with it. But there was a lot of support during our discussion of Dr. Pierce's motions about following through or communicating with enforcement and with the service regarding correct attributing of catch in the ground fish sector plan. I think hopefully we could do request Paul do that by consensus and raise that issue going forward.
Without objection, I see Paul already writing a note to himself on that. Okay, thank you. Whiting.